Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Sunday Roast. It's Sunday the 23rd of February. I'm Phil Carroll.
I'm Charles Archer.
Half term week, Charles. I mean, has it been nice to take a bit of downtime off and, you know, relax a bit, Charles?
That's all right, you know. I mean, I made a trampoline in the pouring rain. I say I did, you know, me and relatives did a couple of days ago. We learned how to use a trampoline tool to, like, get the springs in place effectively. It turns out there's a special way you have to do it, and if you don't do it that way, you'll try and rip your own arms off. But it only took us about 4 hours.
Yeah.
What's How
the
are
weather
you?
been down? Yeah, really good actually. I've had a couple of days, not off, but just a bit of downtime. Been out with the kids. Went to Oxford. We did one of those, you know, escape hunt who used to be listed. I don't know what they're doing, but one of those sort of escape rooms. But we did one which was like an outdoor adventure on the streets of Oxford,
Well, that's
where it
cool.
was like a vampire hunters, and you had like a case with like stakes in it, and you had to go around and find all the clues and everything. It was really, really good actually. I must admit that they're quite a slick operation, and I've done their escape rooms in the past. And have you ever done an escape room? It is quite a buzz experience.
I have done one escape room. I think it can be quite fun. It depends who you're with, isn't it?
Exactly.
Generally, if you're with one person that fixates on one thing, which is clearly not a clue, then which we had, then it becomes quite frustrating fairly quickly. So, yeah. But otherwise, yeah, can be super fun.
Yeah. And what's the weather been like down your neck of the woods?
Well, we had one day of sunshine, and it's just been raining, you know, but it is February in Devon, so you kind of just expect it. And we kind of live for 6 months of the year where it's sunny, or at least not raining. And then the other 6 months of the year, there is nothing to do, and I just work. So it's perfect.
Yes, it fits you well. It's either kind of like cold and grey or warm and wet at the moment. We're in that sort of season, aren't we, more or less? So I did feel though on Friday that we've had like a glimpse of spring on its way, and like that, you know,
Before
just that
that,
warmer weather. So let's hope we get some, because I've got a lot of things planned for this year. But let's have a look at some of the news stories that have dominated. Again, it is Trump, isn't it? I mean, like President Donald Trump, is there a week that can go by where he doesn't dominate the headlines? I mean, obviously we saw this week engaged in direct talks with Vladimir Putin to negotiate a swift end to the Ukraine war, excluding Ukraine and European allies from initial discussions and signaling a willingness to concede territory to Russia, raising concerns in Kiev and Europe about a potential deal favoring Moscow. I mean, I don't know if you've seen, but some of the rhetoric he used. But like, if we just look at some of the statements, how did the Trump's claims actually stand up to any scrutiny? You know, he doubled down on his comments about the war in Ukraine, blaming Zelensky and the West for not preventing it. He said, "You should have ended the war. You should have never started it. You could have made a deal." Now, if we fact check that, Russia launched its full-scale invasion of Ukraine, and it was actually even Putin referred to it as a special military operation in February 2022, an unprovoked war of aggression, which he called, as I say, the special military to demilitarize and denazify Ukraine. So straight away, that comment is just nullified. I mean, what are your thoughts on some of the rhetoric he used?
What was it, President Donald Trump or President Elon Musk nowadays, you
Because
know?
Musk had a go at him as well, didn't he? Some
Yeah,
really
yeah.
blatant
Well, I
comments.
think, I mean, interestingly, you've seen the Republicans kind of tear themselves apart over this. It's the Trump has gone a bit too far. I mean, possibly Trump is just trying to make the regimes in Moscow and in Kiev equal in people's minds, equally corrupt, equally awful, so that when, you know, Russia takes vast swathes of Ukraine's territory, it won't be the end of the world and the world can move on. I mean, equally, you know, the more charitable explanation is that he genuinely believes that Ukraine cannot get back its old borders. And is it simply better to just allow Russia to have this territory and to stem the loss of life, if that's going to be the end result anyway? The problem is, obviously, again, I mean, it's what I said to you a couple of weeks ago. Peace, you know, eventually peace will be declared, because peace is always declared. But the question is, how do you ensure that it stays peaceful? And what kind of security guarantees can you offer Ukraine / Russia to make sure that it stays that way? I don't know. But I
And
think he's mental. He's mental.
He's mental, and it just makes me wonder. His, if you look at who he's now aligned with, he's aligned with China, he's aligned with Russia. He's having the peace talks being held in Saudi. You know, these are despotic states. You know, they look at how Saudi have behaved with the likes of Jamal Khashoggi, and you know, well, let's not forget, this is a tyrannical state who Biden distanced himself with, but then actually cozied up to him when he needed the oil, if you remember. So there is a little bit of hypocrisy
Well,
there.
is it all about oil? You know, it's in Saudi Arabia, you've got Russia, you've got the US. Oil and gas is going to be on the table. And Trump knows that low oil and gas prices, as in high supply of oil and gas, is the key to keeping inflation down and boosting the economy. And he's very much a US first president. It's as simple as that. And so what you have is logical conclusion whereby he's probably going to throw Ukraine to the wolves in order to get a better economic situation for the US. It's as simple as that. The problem is obviously when you look at the longer term, what does that mean, for example, with China and their ambitions for Taiwan, for example? But then you've got Trump, you know, saying he's going to put tariffs on Taiwan and they're going to build their own chip foundries in the United States. So I don't know. I think it's obviously not good. Like the way he's expressed himself is awful. But then at the same time, I look at what he says and I go, hang on, how is this war going to end? If what he does stems from loss of life and we just have the, you know, inevitable end game that we're going to have anyway, is that better? Because we're sitting here, you know, going, you know, talking about it, but there's people dying on the front. You know, simple as that.
But I mean, like those million people plus that have perished on both sides, you wonder for, like, if Trump's come in and just negotiated on the behalf, you just wonder for what, like what have they fought for? What have they died for? Do you know what I
Well,
mean?
Trump did say if he was president, this war wouldn't have happened. You know, and you know, I suspect it would have happened, but it potentially it would have ended a lot more quickly. Ukraine would have had to give up more. But this is the thing, isn't it? Is actually what did they all die for? The answer is not much, and that's the case with many wars.
The other question I've got is, what have Russia got on Trump?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's the other thing, you know, a video maybe, you
Exactly.
know,
And
an
then
email.
now I question, like, is this Trump's, I think you mentioned it as well, is this Trump's method of putting more pressure on Starmer to raise the defense spending to 3 or to
Well,
5%?
exactly. Yeah, well, it's the same with France, Spain, Germany. They're all actually now properly talking about increasing their defense spending because of this. So is this just all a game? You know, get Europe to increase their defense spending and then everything is fine. You know, like when Trump talks about, oh, he's going to take Canada, right? The thing is, a few years ago, people thought it was insane that Putin would invade Ukraine. So people think it's insane that Trump would invade Canada. I don't think Trump is going to invade Canada, but does that make them increase their defense
That's
spending?
a really
Yeah.
and it also it's a really good point, because he's aligned with Putin invading Ukraine for potential resources. So if he's saying, well, I'd like to invade Greenland or Canada, you know, not invade, but you know, some sort of attack on them or ground offensive to take their resources, he's aligned with pre he's almost saying, well, it's fine for them to do that, if that makes sense.
Well, exactly. But this is the problem, right? Because that's where international order breaks down. And it's not good for the US in the long run.
No.
Because again, if you say, oh, the strongest can just take what they want, that's fantastic until you're not the strongest anymore. And obviously, at the moment, it feels like the US will be the strongest forever. But you're also, you know, it sounds hyperbolic, but the tensions between the different states and the kind of the civil mental rioting, I guess, is the best way you can describe it. Between the different kind of people who live in the United States, it's not a very integrated country. It
No.
just really isn't, you know. So it wouldn't surprise me to see something kick off over there
Yeah, I
you know,
mean, the
in the medium
latest
term.
I saw from Reuters on Friday was the fact that his approval ratings are on the you know, decreasing, effectively Trump. So there is some swing there, and I think a lot of that was from the rhetoric used against Ukraine, but also on the latest tariffs on, you know, aluminium, steel that we've alluded to in the past. So that they're starting to sort of bite back. I think the economy. All right, they're not going to see the effects immediately, but I think people are starting to question whether or not he's good for the economy.
Well, I mean, the thing is, presidents are always tied to how well the economy is doing. I would say, though, you know, if he does broker a peace between Russia and Ukraine, no matter how poor it is for Ukraine, if Russia is welcomed in from the cold, what will that do for commodities? What will that do for equity prices, the housing market, everything? It'll rocket, won't it? We know it.
I
Everything
mean,
is
we've
going
already
sky
seen the gold movement, haven't we, of the last 2 or 3 weeks as people sort of like, and the Bitcoin's actually start, a lot of the cryptos
recovering a
now
bit.
starting to move, isn't it, recovering a bit. But gold has certainly done. I mean, silver's moved up to the 33s as well, hasn't it, in the last few sessions. So
Well, silver, we're hoping for a short squeeze. Gold, I mean, obviously there's a question around COMEX and, how much gold there actually is. And we know that, okay, because the paper gold market works on a fractional reserve system, there's not enough gold to satisfy all the contracts. So gold keeps going up and up and up because the physical demand for it is so high. But I mean, the big question with gold and silver is really simple. Do we think there's going to be more gold mined than dollars printed?
yeah,
For the current ratio, and the answer is probably not. Yeah, so I don't know. I don't know. I mean, everything at the moment is sky high. And yet, I look at the world economy and I just think there's so much uncertainty and so much danger. When is this whole thing going to come crashing down? If only for a few months.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we saw that we've seen the ceasefire in Gaza and with Israel, and we've obviously seen a lot of the hostages, obviously, handed over between both parties. And obviously, there's been some negativity coming out as one of the bodies was not of the woman who they said, that obviously
Yeah.
Hamas said, which was terrible. And you do wonder, Israel has come out straight away and said, you have broken the terms of the ceasefire, etc. And so that was very, very negative to see. But I mean, yeah, I just want to live in a time, and everybody's the same, I'm sure, that we want to live in a time where there's less, there's more certainty, there's less uncertainty, there's less worry, there's less war, and
I don't
it's
know. I
devastating.
mean, the problem is obviously is that you have such interconnected media that you have Google on your phone, you have people podcasting, you have Twitter, your fingers in your face all the time. We're in a way more peaceful phase of the world than at any time in history. It just doesn't feel like it because,
Because we're just connected so
we're
much to
connected to
devices,
everything straight away, for example, I mean, what's going on in the DRC, in Kivu, and you wouldn't have heard of that really 40, 50 years ago. I mean, you might have, in the bottom of a newspaper, but now it's front and center. The
goodness.
same with Russia and Ukraine. It's the same with Gaza and Israel. And yet these are flashpoints. We've traveled, I've traveled certainly around plenty of countries in Africa and had no problems at all for years and years and years. I'm sure you are the same. You talk about the unrest in South Africa, for example, and yet, half the world descended on Indaba fairly recently, and I didn't hear a single incident. Did you?
No, you're right. You're right. At the end of the day, most people travel around the world untethered and effectively to the point
But
where
I'll
unhindered.
caveat.
Well, yeah,
There's
okay,
always a
no,
couple out there,
absolutely,
white middle-aged
at the end
couple
of the
that goes
day,
into a fucking
yeah,
war
exactly.
zone
You see
saying
the,
people were
well,
wonderful.
funnily enough, the two that went to Iran and they've been on
Oh,
spying
those. Yeah.
charges. I mean, you can't make that up,
But the
really,
thing is,
but.
I feel very sorry for them and for their families, right? But like, there are places in the world, and I've been to some sketchy
You do not
places,
go
that
there,
you
do you?
don't go. You
No.
don't go. And
You
if you
don't go there
don't.
with a statement saying we believe in people and the good of humans and it's this free spirit. No, it's not how it works.
No, what you'll learn is that, what they believe in is guns and bullets, but
Yeah.
which sounds awful, but and make your own bed, you lie in it, sadly. But
Well,
yeah.
on the subject of gold, obviously, in the week we caught up with Conroy Gold and Natural Resources. You had a very good chat with Kevin McNulty, the senior geologist there, and Cathal Jones. So just have a listen to what they had to say. So Conroy Gold has been making significant progress with its Discs of Gold project, particularly at Clontibret. The relogging program for the drill core is well advanced, with a 3D geological model now under construction. This work is key to unlocking the next stage of investment as discussions with potential strategic and financial partners continue. Looking ahead to 2025, the company is also preparing an application for Clontibret's recognition as a strategic minerals project under the European Critical Raw Materials Act, something that could have major implications given the growing importance of antimony. So, Kevin, let's start with you. Can you give us an overview of what these latest developments mean for Conroy Gold and how they fit into the broader vision for the Discs of Gold project?
Hi, Phil. Yeah, I suppose really what we've been doing is going back to basics a bit in our relogging program in Clontibret. We're well advanced in it now, where, as I say, we're sort of finishing up the portable XRF data. But really, what it has done is it enabled us as a team, myself, Andrew, and Paul, to look at all the core in detail and bring a sort of uniform and consistent approach to all that data and information. That we're getting. And now we're starting to build that geological model. And we're really using that, going to use that model to help us target where our next drilling should be our next program, and particularly looking at where we would could target deeper drilling to seek those higher grade gold mineralization zones at depth. Because we believe, we've already seen there's multiple styles of mineralization in and around Clontibret with gold, gold arsenic, gold associated with stibnite as well there. And really, we believe, as I say, it's an analogy with Fosterville, and we want to be able to target that those high grade free gold mineralization at depth.
Absolutely, yeah. What I want to understand is how has this sort of relogging program, which is by all accounts has been pretty extensive. You're looking at the RNS, you talk about how frequently you're doing these sort of PXRFs, and how has that relogging program helped refine your understanding of the Clontibret deposit? Have you learned anything new? Has there been anything there, any developments?
Yeah, it's basically, taking all this information together and putting it on the sections as has been done. There's subtle things that we've noticed that, the stock mineralization is slightly different than what we had originally envisaged. There is, subtleties in the geometry of the overall deposit in relation to the folding of the geology. And I'm sorry, getting into a bit technical now, but you can start to see some of the structures in relation to that. And the PXRF gives us a whole series of information. It's chemical, it's like a point, and it gives you chemical analysis along the core. So you can start to see alteration zones and things like stibnite and arsenic and those type of halos come out. And they are really used as arrow indicators as you model those to where you want to go as your fluid corridors. So they sort of direct you in the areas where you want to drill. If that, I
Sure.
hope that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing that springs to mind looking at the news is we've recently seen China has implement export bans or controls on antimony. And I saw, I want to really understand what role does the antimony play in the project's economics, and how significant is its potential designation as a strategic raw material?
Very, very good. Yeah, no, absolutely. The antimony is involved with the mineralization. You get gold associated with antimony in Clontibret. That's how the whole area started out. It was actually originally an old antimony mine before gold was even known about. And it wasn't until the 1950s that they pumped out those old antimony workings and found gold there. That some real. Now, we hadn't really focused on the antimony very much. We've been very much focused on the gold. But one of the things we're starting to do now is build towards an antimony model and to build towards an antimony resource. We know there's antimony there. We know even in the concentrates when we did our PEA, we saw some antimony that would be reported in the concentrates. But we've never modeled that economically. So I would think it's going to have a significant effect on the economics. But as I say, like the PEA was done quite a while ago. The gold price was down at 1,000, was 1,400. It was done at then or in around that. You're looking at a gold price now of $2,900 per ounce. So that's a nearly double the gold price. And I can assure you the costs definitely haven't doubled in that period of time that we would expect. So it's a very robust project, Clontibret on its own. And that doesn't even take into account what we're seeing along trend and some of the new discoveries we have, where we're seeing in the Skomarten gold trend, where we're seeing visible gold in outcrop, as when you came to see, like sort of huge slabs of rock peppered with gold. Like it's pretty spectacular.
Yeah, I guess another question I've got is obviously we know that De Meers spent a lot of euros, millions of euros in actually sinking holes into the ground under the old joint venture program. What have you gleaned from those, the core that you took from those various drill holes around Ireland?
Oh, we've taken quite a lot. One of the best holes that we got in Clontibret was part of the joint venture. It was one of the original holes done there, where we got nearly 100 meters at nearly a gram a ton. And then also, like 7 kilometers up the road from that, we've got significant intersections in the Clay Lake area. And our belief now is that these areas, these structural corridors are connected. And again, this is all part of what we're seeing now as a sort of major, area for exploration targeting. So, they've really helped us. Again, I think now going to the PDAC, when we don't have any other joint venture partner, will enable us to be able to talk very freely to a lot of other companies there. And as I say, it's a pretty exciting time in the company.
Okay, let's move on to some of the movers and shakers of the week. The best one I had on SharePad or ShareScope was Arkor Resources, up some 40%. They announced that joint venture partner Group 11 Resources will refocus exploration activities at the Stone Park Zinc Project on the Carrick-Little West area following recent drilling. Two licences on the western side, which do not include Carrick-Little West, have been surrendered. Drill results from Carrick-Little West are pending. Do you know anything about Arcord? So I like the name Arcord. It's very, very you know, Irish, isn't it?
Yeah, indeed it is. Do you know what I think? I think that this for me anyway, I mean, this is not the key point. The point is when you actually focus on one project, right? That's where a lot of the share price gains can be made. And I've been talking, this is kind of funny. I was talking to somebody else the other day about Power Metal Resources and how difficult it is for them to kind of market that company with all their different assets, even though the assets are worth more, way more than the market cap. When you have a company with like just one particular asset, so, you know, Greatland Gold with Havieron for years and years, or Sovereign Metals with Cassia, or Guardian Metal with Pilot Mountain, or Amarok with Nalunaq, et cetera, et cetera. It's so much easier for people to follow the story and just, you know, push it ahead. And then when you get that one catalyst, share price shoots up and everything's fine.
Yes.
So hopefully they'll be able to go on a tear and keep rising next week.
Yeah, absolutely. Ithaca Energy reported strong financial results for 2020. Greatland Gold, as you just alluded to there, they announced results from the maiden underground drilling campaign at the West Dome underground target at Telfer, confirming a high-grade near-mine opportunity. What did you make of that? I mean, I saw a good interview Sean was on in the week with Proactive talking through those results. What did you make of the fact that they've now gone into the, effectively
well,
gone
I think
underground?
If you look at all
that?
Of the, we'll call them tier two mines, you know, in quotation marks. You can't see my fingers. They have these mineral resource estimates, right? And then the tier one miners, the Newmonts and the Barricks of the world, they start looking at them and go, oh, this is a bit worrying. They're going to go run out in a few years. We'll offload them to somebody else. And yet, if you look at all of the mines in Western Australia, they always last years and years and years beyond what that original, you know, scope, you know, the original definitive feasibility studies say, beyond the original reserves. So it doesn't surprise me at all. And to be honest, I mean, Sean has been talking for ages about how he thinks there's more gold there and how he's going to expand the reserves. That those initial results are really, really give you really good confidence, because there's going to be a period of time between when Telfer's ore starts to run low and you haven't got Havieron online. So if you have more gold ore there, it just makes the investment case so much stronger. And yes, happy days, effectively. I mean, mostly for me, I'm waiting for that ASX listing, which Sean says is going to be next quarter, so in Q2. That's Q4 in Australia, but Q2 for us. It might get delayed because these things take forever. It wouldn't surprise me if it's you know, a few more months down the line. But when it does come in, you're going to get the pension funds coming in. You're going to get the franking credit crew from Australia. You're going to get all the grant funding and everything else. And it's going to be wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it just firms up the fact that Telfer, obviously, we know they've got the waste materials on the ground with, I think it's like 500,000 ounces available to them. And then obviously that this now, the fact that they've gone West Dome underground is now become a high priority target. And it's effectively just given the Telfer mine life extension, really, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, that's the point, isn't it? Yeah, to extend it forever and ever. You know, maybe you don't even need to do have it around for years and years and years. You know, that's the hope, even though it's meant to be coming online in 2027. I mean, my perspective, you know, I've shared this before on here, is that once there's proper free cash flow coming in and they've got their emergency fund sorted out and there's money in the bank, they're again going to go spoke and wheels. They're going to look at all, you know, there's dozens of companies out there with reasonably promising assets, right? From the Antipas, who have had a hell of a lot of work done, all the way down to like the tiny little ones like Artemis, for example, or Global Petroleum. And they're going to want to explore all of those. And they're going to be able to sign amazing deals and make loads of money. It's going to be fantastic.
Yeah. And I like the fact that, you know, this drilling they've done, they've hit this strike. This mineralization effectively remains open along this strike and down dip. I think it's over 700 meters.
Well, they can keep going, can't they?
Which basically shows that it shares the geological characteristics with that main dome underground, you know, which we know has produced to date, like, I think it's like 3.1 million ounces of gold and 210,000 tons of copper. So fantastic that they've effectively joined it all up now, is from what I can see from the RNS.
No, well, this is the thing, isn't it? But the problem is, it's still relatively early days, so it's a lot of speculation.
Of course, yeah.
But
they need to sink more holes, and I think that is it 16 of the 19 there that intercepted the crater? And there's going to be obviously more work done on that as well. So very promising.
Well, it's exciting, isn't it? And the other thing is, I mean, we've been following Greatland since, you know, the first drill went in the ground, really. And it's funny to think that, you know, but obviously they had the joint venture with Newmont, but back in the day it was just the same as any of the other explorers, with a hope and a dream. And now it's got a market cap over £1 billion and rising.
Sure. Okay, Sovereign Metals, Charles, they announced that the test work on graphite from Cassia confirmed the material's suitability for refractory applications, demonstrating low sulfur levels and minimal impurities. So again, great work done by the guys in Germany there. 70% of the Cassia's graphite meets the size requirements for the refractory market, which is the second largest end user of natural graphite. What did you make of those results? And again, just sort of like classifies Cassia as being a world-class asset.
Just gets better and better, doesn't it? I mean, they keep ticking off boxes. I'm just waiting for Rio to just present them with a nice check, and we can all just walk off into the sunset. I mean, maybe not, because then AIM loses another high quality resource company, of which, when I say high quality, I mean like ones with large market capitalizations with decent futures. There's not that many of them on AIM, and it'd be a shame to lose it. Said that, like we're talking the optimized pre-feasibility study. The Cassia's incremental cost of graphite production was, I think it was $241 a ton. Off of my head. So, compare that to other operators, which are looking at like 500, 600, because the graphite is just is incidental to the rutile production. You've got the lowest cost graphite operation in the world, lowest cost titanium operation in the world, largest rutile deposit in the world, second largest graphite deposit in the world. All of the due diligence has been done. And I guess it's just frustrating that the share price is not significantly higher than where it is. I think that's the only thing for me. It should be much higher. And,
That's a good point. So I guess the question on this one is obviously the previous work that they did was for EV, for EV side of things, wasn't it? This is for the refractory work, which is obviously the market there, which is led by steel production. So what do you make of this? I mean, the production costs, as you've alluded to there, at 241, and I think that the flake graphite for the refractory use has achieved prices up to like $1,193 per ton, which is significantly higher than those used in the lithium ion battery space. So what do you make of that? Is that open them up to a new and bigger market?
I think it opens up to a bigger market. It also makes it a much bigger deposit in terms of significance, because the rutile is unique, and there hasn't been a rutile deposit, a large one, discovered since the 1960s. So it is by itself incredibly valuable. But the graphites, I mean, there's artificial graphite, there's graphite, other graphite deposits around the world, but you need a specific kind of graphite in order to both be suitable for EVs and also be suitable for the steel market. So it's the thing is with the EVs, right, is yes, it's going off in China, but actually if you look at the USA and Europe, electric vehicles are starting to stutter a bit. So you want, if you're going to invest in a graphite deposit, you want to be able to sell it onto different off-takers depending on what's going on in the global market. Now, when you're looking at a deposit like Cassia, where it's, in my mind anyway, that thing was going to get mined for the next 50 years. You need to know that you're going to be able to sell it for 50 years. Do we know that you're going to be able to sell graphite into the EV market 30 years from now? We don't know that. Do we know, hydrogen cars might take over, for example. Do we know that we're going to be able to sell it to the steel market? Absolutely. Because that's going to be here forever and ever. So it's fantastic
Yeah,
news.
it's a good point. And the other one that's come up this week is one I almost want to give you and Kev credit for, and that's Guardian Metal Resources, because I do feel like the news around the Golconda project in Nevada, the gold project, was kind of, you were saying, could just get it
I
trenched
just
on the
bloody, I
Guardian.
just
And honestly, I
literally,
do feel like you two
I
have
did,
got
I
this got
pushed him
this running.
into it. We were exchanging things on WhatsApp, and I was just like, look, because the trenching is minimal, right? And it's carbon mineralization, so you can't really see what's there, but you're telling me you think what you see is good. So I was like, so if you can see something good, but you can't see the gold is there because it's not visible, surely that must mean it's really good. So just go trench it. It's not like you're sinking drills into the ground or throwing millions of dollars at it. Just go trench it and say, oh, look at that, look at that. Wonderful gold mineralization. What was it, like 6, 7 grams in those?
It was like 6 meters at 13.12 grams per
Yeah,
ton.
and you're effectively digging it with a spade, right? And carbon mineralization, you're looking at like between 1 and 5 grams per ton of gold on average. So that's higher, those are decent grades to get. I mean, is it something that's going to entice a JV partner? Probably not. It's early stage stuff. But is it something that's definitely worth doing and that'll make that property more valuable? Absolutely.
I like the comment at the end. Basically, you know, Guardian remains obviously primarily focused on the tungsten, but these gold results offer additional upside to shareholders, aligning with strong gold market conditions as the company seeks to monetize Golconda. Well, you couldn't have come at a better time, those results, really, with gold punching
Gold
through
just
all-time
rising and
highs. You know,
rising.
I mean, it's fantastic. And as you say,
Well, yeah, I mean, what I'm hoping for, because there's plenty of operators searching for gold in the region, right? What I would hope is that there's somebody drilling, and there's just a drill rig that's
Drill
just
baby
available.
drill, drill baby
Well,
drill.
yeah, no, but like it's funny because you don't really think of it in practical terms as an investor, but I would just hope that there'll be like a 3 or 4 week period in between drilling contracts where you've got like a rig out there and a team, and you, all of them can just go and scoot over.
And the beauty of the, I mean, I've been to terrain like you have, where you know you've got a rainy season that hampers you for 6 months of the year. Well, in Nevada, it's pretty much drill all year round. It's
Yeah,
the weather is
100%.
either super hot, super cold, and then at the current climate, as Oliver was saying, it's really, really good climate. It's a really good time of year to be out there. Anywhere up till June is pretty, you know, it's coolish, and then as soon as you get the sort of July, August, September, you're moving into mad temperature season, but you can still drill there.
Well, we were talking about a site visit out there, actually, a couple of the investors, and I imagine you guys have talked to Oliver about it as well.
Yeah.
And you know, it's only 100 miles or so from Vegas, right? I feel like that would be
We're up
a
for it. We're going to do a road trip there. I mean, obviously, we fly into Vegas and then we can drive out. But yeah, it's not that far out. And I
No,
think he
it's really
mentioned
not.
end of May, if you're like maybe a date for the diary, sort of around May, June
Yeah.
time.
Sounds good.
Sounds
Sounds
good.
good. I think it's with the tungsten Chinese export ban, which I predicted a couple of years ago, and it's finally happened.
Yeah.
We're now just waiting for that damn grant funding, and then this thing is just going to go, you know, ballistic. But I mean, the conspiracy theorist in me suggests that Bacon, the chap behind UCAM, knows that it's coming, and this is why he's decided to take those shares off Bare Metal at
Yeah,
this point in
that's a
time.
really good one. Just come on to that news, because they obviously acknowledged as well in an RNS that they welcomed UCAM on as an investor from memory, didn't they, as well this week?
Well, they've already invested, weren't they? But they just
Sure.
massively upped their stake
Yeah,
by
up the
taking,
stake. Absolutely,
I
yeah.
mean, what was like 23, 24% of GMET they now own. The thing that you need to know about the team behind these people, because they were also there in the early days of Jubilee Metals, and also they're operating a joint venture with Power Metal, but also with Amaroq Minerals up in Greenland, is that they are seriously professional, and they also have a hell of a lot of money behind them. Now, why this matters, there's two things. The first is that they don't put money into things that they don't think they're going to make money out of. And the second is that the secondary asset, which may not be secondary for much longer, Tempiute, is that how we pronounce it?
Ute, yeah.
Tempiute, there we go. Sorry, it's been a long day. But I mean, I've looked at a refurbishing of old mines in the area and done a peer comparison. You're looking around $50 million to make that happen. Now, if you say, you know, you can take, you know, issue some new equity, have some offtake, have some debt, having these kind of partners behind you mean that that's something that we can probably, GMET can probably easily fund if it chooses to. So you could have a situation where you have grant funding pay through the entire definitive feasibility study at Pilot Mountain, while the getting into production at the new asset is all completely funded as well. And
Yes.
then you're on, and the other thing is, well, when you get to a 50 million pound market cap, which GMAT is on the verge of, you
Sure.
then get you then become eligible to be included in all sorts of funds and all
Yes.
sorts of things, which make it very difficult for you to fall below that market cap again. So, you know, the march to
Yeah.
100 million is on, I would
Yeah,
say.
and I think that first 50 million is the hardest 50 million. And the other thing I like about GMET is the fact that they've got a lot of warrants that have been, you know, they had a warrant conversion as well on Friday. We saw
Just
more
every other
money
day,
coming
yeah.
in every other day. And the beauty is they've still got like, you know, was it 127 million shares outstanding? It's not a lot, really. It's a good share
Yeah,
structure.
and the warrants are at 17p, and there's an accelerated clause at 70, so you might find that they're forced to exercise, you know, relatively soon.
Sure.
The thing is, it means that you have constant money coming into the company. But what's really exciting about it, and you can check out the volume for yourself. So generally, but not always, but generally, when somebody exercises the warrants that they've got in an IPO, they sell their original shares and then use the money to pay for the warrants. They have the new shares and have some profit. With GMET, that does happen. Has happened a few times, and people, you know, people have cash flow issues. That's fine, you know, that's what the warrants are for. But most people are exercising their warrants with their own money and just keeping hold of the additional shares.
No, that's a
And
good point.
I ran a poll on the Telegram group, and if you look at the shares that are, listed, between insiders effectively, and then between high net worth investors slash semi high net worth investors, the effective free float there is virtually nothing, and people aren't selling, which is it's just very, very rare. It
Yeah,
just suggests,
I saw that poll as well. Yeah, I saw that. It's very, very interesting. You also did one about shares, didn't you, as well? I think this 12,007, you're just looking at 0.01% of GDP.
I mean, well, we've got it here, don't we? I mean, you have all sorts of people saying, oh, I've got millions of shares, millions of shares. But it's what I find quite interesting is that in this group, you've got, 20% of people in there have less than 12,700 shares, which is 0.01% of GMET, and 24%, just around 25%, have more than 0.2% of a company, and there's 72 votes there. So in this Telegram group, you've got a really wide spread of
Did one of
people.
those just tick up while you were listening?
They did, But I think it's funny because it's almost prisoner's dilemma, right? Because while we say it's a team game, it's not. Everybody is in it for themselves, right? I think this is the stock market. This is the brutal reality. And yet it's almost like a game show because as long as nobody sells and the demand for the shares keep rising, the market makers have to put the share price up to entice
You're
somebody
making
to
it sound
sell.
like it's deal or no deal. Wait,
It pretty much is,
I've got
though,
the
isn't
dealer on
it?
the phone. Do
But
you
you
want to
have
open the
so
box?
many, but you, the problem is you have so many people with shares. They're all split so individually that at some point, somebody will take a profit. And you don't blame them when they do, because that's
No,
what the whole point of
absolutely.
investing.
Yeah,
But
absolutely.
it's super
And
fun.
they've had a lot of opportunity because let's face it, it's hovered around the 30 to 35p mark for a long time now. So anyone who's going to have taken profit, you'd expect them to have, taken it by now, wouldn't you, in reality
Well, you
terms?
would do, wouldn't you? I think the thing is, it's a combination of the right story, the right metal, the right time, really good marketing, competent CEO who gets what it is to like talk about the company in the social media age. But I'll tell you the other thing is that just the IPO market in general, and I've been in a few of the IPOs over the past couple of years. How many of them have seen a return, 5x your return? Most of them are below their IPO price.
And in the case of Power Metals, that they did nearly a 10x return on their investment, didn't they, as well, of late?
And the share price hasn't moved. I mean, power is the fundamental, the disconnect is crazy at Power Metal at the
Yeah,
moment.
I
But
agree.
I think the basic thing is with Guardian is that if you have a port, if you invested all the IPOs, you want to let your one winner ride, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And they've still got a very chunky holding as well now,
Well, it's still
in
20%, isn't it?
so it's very good. Okay, the other one, Ondo, and I know it's one that you've talked about, that they announced that Pure Insurance is expanding its leak detection program from downstate New York into six additional states: Indiana, North Carolina, New Jersey, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Washington. So great news there. Obviously, Craig Foster has praised Pure's commitment to proactive risk management, highlighting high member engagement. What do you make of that? I mean, so that was a good success story of, I'm not saying it's not a success now, but it had a really good rise, didn't it, in sort of last year, 22, 23, or so say 23, 24, and it's still performing well now, isn't it? It feels like it's dropped back, and but it does feel like they're progressing well with LeakBot.
Well, I think what's quite interesting is that, if you look at the share price action, August 2023, it was trading about 35p a share. It drops to about 15p a share between May and October 2024. And then it shot straight back up, to roughly around for the 40p mark. It trades up and down. But the thing is that the LeakBot, I mean, I covered it at the IPO, and the LeakBot is a piece of technology that solves a problem that is global, water leakage. Can be expanded across the entire world, and it's patented, and it just works, right? No one has been able to crack it, and it has been cracked. And you're just getting more and more evidence of this. And I guess the only question for Craig is, we should get him on the show actually at some point, but the only question of him really is about funding the expansion, because yes, while the insurers are going to be paying, for a lot of it, if you want to go global with this, it's going to be very expensive. You need a big backer, and how much of a company do you give up to make that happen? Or you can go down the slow route, but then that takes a longer time. But I mean, he hasn't put a foot wrong. Everything's going gravy. I think it's one of the best companies on AIM. and it's not in junior resource, so it's great for
I
diversification.
mean, the tech, it's a great technology stock, and he's got a proven track record with other companies that he's helped run in the past. I remember talking to him when it first came, not first came out, but you know, when it was under the radar, and having Craig on the show actually, and he went into the, you know, all the techno, how it all works, and explained it. And I was fascinated by the technology. So yeah, great company that is. Zenith Energy as well. I mean, they have, obviously there's been a lot of talk about the arbitration. Obviously they announced this week that the final hearings in the ICC2 arbitration against the Republic of Tunisia regarding the Sidi El Kilani concession are scheduled for next week. The arbitration follows Tunisians' alleged arbitrary termination of the SLK concession, which led Zenith subsidiary CNAOG to claim approximately $130 million in damages, including lost production revenue, unpaid invoices, and breach of renewal rights. The CEO, Andrea Cattaneo, emphasized that Zenith aims to achieve legal redress for significant damages suffered by CNAOG, and they were trading around the 9 pence mark on Friday, so they've moved up well in the last sort of 6 weeks of trading. But I mean, it's going to be one of them flip of a coins. It's like, if the news comes that they've got that, won the damages, and it's not just the 130, they're pursuing other ones, then that could add 4 or 5x onto the market cap.
Yeah, of course it could. I think the problem of it is, A, it, like you say, it's
It's
binary. And maybe
binary.
in some ways it's nice to play a binary one because, you know, and then you know straight away. I tell you, you know, Emerson and GreenX Metals, which, you know, I'm invested in both of those, and it's a similar story in many ways. But I don't know Zenith's cash position at the moment, but the thing is, even if they get awarded the money, and it's the amount of money they want and not a lower amount, every single time the government's stringing you along, they're like, we want to set aside award, we want to challenge it, we want to do everything, and that takes months and months slash years
Dealing
and
with
years.
Tunisia here as well, and it's
You know, you know, Vast Resources, for example, which, you know, people joke about a bit, but they had that diamonds package awarded them a couple of years ago and just hasn't shown up. Now, obviously, it's Tunisia. Yes, okay, you might get the award and you might get the money and it's a final hearing. But then, you know, what happens when they go, oh, we want to challenge it, or we're just going to change the law, or, you know, X, Y, and Z? I'm not saying that will happen, and I'm not trying to hurt, you know, Zenith Energy shareholders. I'm just saying that the reason why the share price is where it
Oh,
is.
it's a heavily risky one, but
Super fun.
it's
Super
a
fun to
absolutely
watch.
super fun one. Yeah, absolutely. Then the biggest shaker of the week was SupplyAtme, who were down some 40%. But anything else you want to mention, Charles? Because I know you talked about a couple there, didn't you, before?
Glencower, I think, is one that I want to talk about a little bit because, oh, they finished the week at 4.2p, which is nice. They've come up a little bit. But they had a nice little RNS talking about the hydropower study. So they've got access to the water that they need for the graphite operation they've got out there. And basically, I mean, it looks like they've pretty much, they're on the verge. I mean, they're advancing towards a power purchase agreement. They've got a reasonably low cost advantage at the outset that they have, Arum Cross. And we're now just kind of waiting for them to get financing approved. And it's the same with a few more in the market. You know, Alien Metals is another one, and with a couple of projects. You've got Bazant, which we've talked about, you know, before on here several times. Asia Met as well. There's a few of these, you know, where the share price is, you know, pretty much at multi-year lows. But if they get project level financing, they're all going to shoot up. And I'm hoping all four of them do.
Yeah, I mean, there was an RNS on, I think, Friday from Bazant, wasn't there? A holdings RNS with somebody at Charles Watson had taken over
We've been
3%.
trying to hunt down who Charles
Yeah,
is.
it's interesting. Yeah, I've been trying as myself. I think a couple of sleuths have found somebody who could it could potentially fit, but again, I'm not going to speculate on that too much. But yeah, I mean, I think that one has got a good chance. Maybe not. I mean, this year I'm looking forward to it. But it's all down. It literally is down to the environmental. You know, the
Yeah, 100%.
licensing on that
And
one.
then getting financing signed off. You know, it's the same with all of them. And it's about, you know, do you, basically it's the same with all of them, which is that most of them don't have much cash, right? Even after raises. So you're kind of, it's a race between running out of cash and getting financing signed off. And the fun thing with something like Bazan, where it's got like a 3-4 million market cap, is that it doesn't even matter really what the deal looks like as long as you get something signed. And then the revenue will, you know, come in and everything will be gravy.
But the quite a few of Colin Bird's companies now, like Extract Galileo, have actually got quite a lot of cash position when you look at the
Well,
sale
let
of
me.
like the Manica, and you
Yeah,
know,
Manica for
even
Extract, yeah.
Extract has got, I think it's like 3.3 million cash or something like that, which is pretty much covers the cap. It doesn't take
Yeah.
into any value on the Zambian assets, on the Bushranger project. You know,
Well,
there's a lot
even
of
the
things.
Bazan, I mean, they've got shares now in an Australian company, which would mean it's worth more than what the market cap is.
Yes,
It's the same with
exactly.
Power Metal, it's the same sort of thing, which is going to be mad misvaluations in the market that no one really wants to, look at or care about. I really hope that one of these companies has decided, we're just going to, do a special dividend and send all the cash back to the shareholders, and then we maybe
Yeah,
jolt some
we
energy
need a
back
few of
into
those
it.
winners, though. As you say, I think somebody said it on the groups, and some of the companies need to start really delivering in this year
Yeah. Yeah, well,
to get that buzz back into it,
I think it's fair, to say for Colin, for example, that's exactly right, and but then he's been maneuvering for the past 5 or 6 years in Zambia and Namibia, and now he's perfectly positioned, and now it's a question, can he execute? I think he can, but that's it, execute on the plan, share prices rocket, and all is forgiven.
Yeah, but he's also at the mercy of a lot of other extenuating circs
Yeah,
that
of
are out of his
course.
control, just like mining is. People think it's the push of a button, it's done, but it very rarely
Well,
is that.
it's when people build a mine, right? And like, it doesn't matter how, whether it's a simple crush, sort, whatever, simple, or you're building like a whole proper massive lithium operation. Building a mine is very, very difficult and takes forever, and things go wrong. I don't know. I just think that the market needs a winner, and we're going to get one. And then the other thing is just more macro, isn't it? We just need the US market to
Yeah, I was going to
crash.
ask you on one thing on that. There was something I had on the notes, which was down to, well, it was actually down to UK inflation, which obviously we saw jump to 3% in January 2025, which is a 10-month high, up from the 2.5% in December, obviously driven by rising food prices, airfares, fuel costs, and the removal of VAT exemptions on private school fees, which obviously isn't going to hit a lot. But what are your thoughts on that? I mean, obviously that's effectively it reduces the likelihood of another imminent, Bank of England interest rate cut from the current 4.5 is what I would say. And I did talk about this at length last week. Is that, Kev asked me, what do you think is what is the likelihood of the interest rates dropping further? And I said, well, until they get inflation under control, no, there's not going to be any more further rate cuts.
Well, the thing is, you're contending with the United States, and they're talking about a Doge dividend where they're going to send $5,000 back to
Yeah,
every
that
US
was
citizen.
crazy. I saw that. I mean, what do you make
Well,
of
do you know, I mean, regardless of anything else, obviously that's going to be inflationary no matter what they say, because that's money that goes straight into people's pockets. They're going to spend it. And we're competing against the US dollar. So if the inflation goes up in the US, then no matter what anything else happens, we've got to keep our rates high to compete with the US dollar. It's as simple as that, or we're going to be in big problems. As far as this month's CPI figure goes, I mean, it's funny. I mean, this is a direct quote from me from last month. So inflation has only fallen more than expected year over year because they collected the data on 10th of December 2024 and are comparing data from 12th of December 2023. Railway line fares are much lower on 2024's collection date, which means next month we will see a surprise increase above expectations, which is exactly what happened. It's not actually, yes, you can add in like the VAT, which I think for private school fees, which I think it's ridiculous to have in the basket, but it's the measuring dates. The dates they measured it on are different. So obviously you're going to have different inflation numbers. So I think if you strip out the VAT rise on the school fees and then strip out the travel, which is based on different dates, and the inflation has barely risen at all. It's
Yeah, I
all
mean,
just
do you think
smoke and
what's the
mirrors.
real what is the real world inflation, would you say?
The real one of it was the Freddo index that we had a
Yeah, the
chat
Freddo
about.
index. Yeah.
It's fucking, I saw a Freddo for £1 in
Wow.
WH, a whole
So
British
it's not
pound
only
sterling.
like 10x in value or in cost, it's also reduced by at least half the size.
They're flat and horrible as well, but
Shrinkflation, as we call it.
I think I found it quite a fun statistic actually on it, that with regards to like minimum wage, even though you think minimum wage has gone up massively, and it has, and it's a big burden on companies, right? But in 2005, a UK minimum wage worker would need to work 1 minute and 47 seconds to afford a Freddo. In 2025, 20 years later, the same minimum wage worker would need to work for 4 minutes and 55 seconds. So 3 or 4 times as much time you have to work to buy a Freddo compared to 20 years ago. And if that doesn't illustrate the damage inflation has done, I don't think anything will, as
So,
far as
we've
Jesus
not got
Christ.
the we've heard of the Big Mac index, where you go around the world and you can you compare the price of a Big Mac and it gives you an idea of the economy. But now we've got effectively the Freddo wage index.
Yeah, which I think, makes a lot of sense, because everyone knows that a Freddo is meant to be like a gateway drug for big Dairy Milk chocolate bars when you're an adult, right? So the little Freddo is meant to be a tiny thing that you can buy with a few coins as a child in a local shop. And if you take that away from children, then that's just, it's just, we used to be a proper country. We used to get, you'd go Big Macs, right? You used to get the bus, right? And I don't take the bus that much anymore. When you used to get the bus, you got a Big Mac and medium fries for $1.99 on the back of the bus ticket, right? Surely you'll remember this.
Used
God,
to.
could you imagine that now? The doors would be rammed with millions of people begging for their £1 burger. It's just the inflation, the damage it does that you don't really think, because like day after day, week after week, month after month, things just trickle up and up and up. But then you look around you at society and what people can and can't afford, and it's actually quite scary. You know, outside of our tax brackets, people are really struggling in the UK.
No, absolutely, absolutely. It's not even funny, really, is it, when you think about it? But literally, I think there was an article on the Birmingham saying Cadbury fans rage over change to Freddo bars, which means the country is cooked. I mean,
What,
talk
mini
about.
eggs? Have you seen the price of
Yeah. Oh,
fucking mini eggs? You think
man.
gold is going up quickly? Cocoa, this 185 for 80 grams of mini eggs in a tiny bag, where you used to get like a whole giant tube for £1. Marriott's Mondella's doing the Cadbury, and the American fuckers ruining Easter. Hate them. Ruin the chocolate, the ruined mini eggs. Cream eggs, right? Eggs, you get six eggs in a carton, and now you only get five. And Tesco club card price is £3. And look, I can afford them, but on principle, I'm not eating a cream egg this year. And they can fuck off with their shit pricing. Not interested.
Gonna have to get the old parental advisory on this one.
That is 8:20 in the evening on Friday, and it's been a
Yeah,
long week. But do you know what I
absolutely.
mean? Like, it's sort of, I'll compare this actually. There's Arizona iced tea in the United States, right? You may or may not know. It's still 99 cents a can. It's a privately owned company. And the owner was asked, you know, you could increase the price. It's a really popular product. He said, but why would I? We can still generate a profit. We own the factories. We employ everybody. It's a family-owned business. Why would I take away something that's nice that all Americans like and is a treat when I can keep the price the same and still generate a decent profit?
Yeah.
And you
No,
compare
that's
that
true.
to, you
That's true.
know, capitalism that's so rampant now. And everyone needs to make a profit, but I wonder whether they're going to bite off more than they can chew. And at some point, it's the bigger companies who, you know, control food, and there's only sort of four or five of them. They're going to run into competition. He's going to think, hang on, we can do this a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway.
And all right, well, we've ranted enough there. It was a good little rant there. It's good to see you getting frustrated about these things. Nothing else to add. A couple of TV things. I actually took the kids to see Paddington Improved just for a complete switch off because it was a half term week. I actually really enjoyed it. You know, everybody loves a bit of Paddington, don't they? Some fantastic scenes in Peru. And Bridget Jones' missus made me sit through the late, not at the cinema, but it was on Peacock. And I watched that. Again, it's a great feel good. There's some nice messages in it,
My
Todd.
well, my wife watched it, and she said it was really funny, but also really, really sad. And
Yes.
sort of like, I mean, the other thing is, you know, when Bridget Jones came out, and I was very young. We were both very young, right? And now she's just old. Everyone's just old, and we're just graying, and we're becoming the older generation. And it's just a bit, yeah. It's nostalgic, is what it is, I guess, more than
Yeah, it's
anything else.
nostalgia sells, doesn't it? As you say, like she's chronicled her diary for, you know, as you say, and now they've brought in this young toy boy because they want to keep it sort of current, you know what I mean? He's half her age. She could be a his mother, but it is good. I mean, as you say, it's quite poignant, and there's some nice messages. But other than that, obviously, Kev's missing this week. We'll say good shout out to Kev. He's feeling a bit under the weather. I think he's picked up some sort of, you know, chest infection throat. He's got a sore throat. He wouldn't be able to speak. So big shout out to big Kev there, and yeah, and obviously, just want to say Charles Archer. Thanks very much for coming on, Charles. It's great to hear your musings, and let's hope the market picks up again. We say that probably pretty much every week, but yeah.
It is picking up, Phil. You know, like, I know you're trying to sign off, but how many stocks this year have, you know, bagged or double bagged on a day? You know,
Oh, you're
how,
absolutely
like, Greatland Gold's shooting up, Sovereign Metals doing well. Like, there are plenty of companies that are still doing really well on the AIM index, even if the index as a whole is struggling. You know,
Yeah.
you just have to pick the right ones. That's the only trouble.
Pick the right ones. Yeah. So I had an interesting email this week from Alex Stella from Investor Hub, basically saying he listened to the podcast where you, I believe, referenced one of his articles related to the Australian Stock Exchange and the differences, the challenges of raising money, certainly in the UK compared to Australia. So it was really nice to get some feedback on that. So I was just hoping maybe one week we could try and get Alex on to talk about it. You know, he's very experienced in the Australian Stock Exchange and also on the London markets as well. So it was a good article, he said.
Yeah, good. Yeah, well, the thing is, Alex was talking about on LinkedIn, if you issue, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. If you issue 50 grand in shares as payment for services, you're going to have to pay a minimum of £15,770 plus VAT as a fee in London. In Australia, the equivalent is about 800 quid. So there's all sorts of things. I mean, I did a whole article about how Australia is effectively better. Alex, like me, does work for both Australian and London-based companies. And you're looking at the small cap mining sector in Australia just expand and bound away. And yes, a lot of it is because obviously in Australia, there's a lot of mining opportunity in the country. But we also have mining opportunity in the UK. If you think about it, we just don't take advantage of it. We've got coal, we've got tin, we've got lithium, we've got gold, we've got silver. And it's very frustrating that we kind of like, we have this kind of blueprint on Australia that we could just take and apply to the AIM market and give it a shot in the arm and massively improve it. And yet we don't copy their homework, even though all the work has been done for us already. Very frustrating. It would be great to talk to
I think
Alex
if I
about it.
remember your article, Charles, you talked about the tax advantage, the way that they do investments. It helps investors by having some sort of amount you can hold or certain tax
Well,
advantages. Is that
there's
right?
the tax advantages is crazy, Phil. So the basic thing is the imputation system, which you'll know is like franking credits, right? It's a dividend. We used to have this until 2016, and then we replaced it with a dividend allowance of 5 grand, which you then cut by 90% to 500 quid currently, and it's probably going to get thrown out the window next budget. But in Australia, you can attach franking credits to dividends, right? Which basically eliminates double taxation on them. So if you, okay, let's say, for example, the example is in the article, say an Australian company pays a $10 million dividend, has a $10 million profit, and it's paid corporation tax at 30%. Shareholders get paid their dividends, and they can get a franking credit equal to the corporation tax paid on their portion, so they get the tax back. You don't get that in the UK. And then, beyond the corporate expenses, you also have, massive things. You get research and development credits, you get exploration credits. It's virtually, it's basically what it is, right? It's a lot more of the risk of exploration and development is taken on board by the tax system. So they won't, it's not that they won't, it's not that they're going to fund you to do everything, but they're not going to penalize you, or they're going to not going to tax you particularly much while you're doing the exploration. And then even once you're in production, they have the imputation credits, which mean that, you're incentivized, A, to be listed on the ASX so you can, do that for your investors, but B, to continue to grow. It's just very frustrating. I mean, the other rule that I find really important is around when you're raising money, raising capital just in general. So in Australia, you suspend the shares, then you say we're raising capital, so no one can short them, and then you raise the capital, then you unsuspend and you go on your way. But the other thing, which is not particularly well known, is something called a non-renounceable entitlement offer. And basically what this means is that if you're already a shareholder, you get preferential treatment to acquire those shares at the discount. So if, I don't know, let's say Greatland Gold, because it's just a well-known name in London, if they said, when they did that capital raise at 4.8p, under the Australian system, generally they would suspend, and then they would go to the current investors, and you would get an email from like IG or Hargreaves or whoever, and they say they're raising at 4.8p. Would you like your allocation based on your current shareholding? Yes or no? And how much fairer that is than the London system, where the current shareholders don't get to jump in first, often for companies they've supported for years and years.
Yes, no, it's interesting. It's good. And I guess that brings me on to the last question for you, which is, and I always like your thoughts on this, is the cash ISA, the dearth or the death of the cash
Oh,
ISA. Now, this is an
I'm
interesting
glad we mentioned this
because
one, yeah.
Rachel Reeves has said she wants to get retail investors investing again, and that she thinks by doing removing the cash ISA that she can get them pushed into the stocks and shares ISA, where many people, she says, don't realize that compounding, the growth of stocks, that you can actually generate much more interest. Obviously, there's also a risk element. We've seen stocks can go down as well as they can go up, but generally, what are your thoughts on that?
I think it's really complex. The first thing is that we have interest. You have to pay tax on interest you earn over, I think it's like £500, maybe 1,000, depending on your tax band. But people who are in cash, you can be in cash for a massive reasons. It could be that you want to buy a house in the near future, and you can't, if the stock market drops by 30%, then you can't buy a house a year or two from now. It might be that you want to retire. It might be that you need to ensure you've got money to pay for school fees. For example, it might be that you want to buy a supercar and you're saving up and you don't want to take the risk. The lack of financial education is the problem. People should choose to stay out of cash and generally invest. And so forcing people not to without giving them the education could be a disaster, because what happens when people go, fine, I can't invest in cash, I'm going to go invest in one specific small cap
You
stock.
make a very good point because
Or I'm going to go invest in Tesla and it drops 50%,
but as you say, if you put it, for instance, pensions, which is similar, obviously we know a lot of that is invested in funds or in the stock market. They say that you should, it's a 7-year recovery cycle, isn't it? So unless, as you say, if you need that money for a house deposit or a car or an emergency fund, you're gonna have to wait 7 years to see some of the returns.
Well, I think, well, often that's not, sometimes you get a return in year one, but it can be the case you put your money in and the market has, that's the year that the market drops 50%, like in 2008 or 2001 or even 2020, the pandemic.
2020,
Imagine we're in mid-February now. Imagine Rachel Reeves put this rule in February 2020, right? And then everyone moves their cash into the stock market. It crashes 40% around the world in the space of 2 months. Now, obviously, over the longer term, I think it's much, much better. I think everybody should be investing way more than they should be being in cash, because you're losing out on masses of income. My concern is that Rachel Reeves is doing this because she wants people to invest more in UK stocks. And yet we have the likes of Glencore trying to leave the FTSE 100 along with, virtually everybody else who matters. And there's, because the growing in this country is very difficult because of the tax burden. But then you also have stamp duty on shares, which is antithetical to the idea. If you say, fine, you can't make any cash anymore, you have to go buy shares, and then you go buy shares. Oh, should I buy Tesco and pay a 0.5% stamp duty and have lower growth and have lower dividend? Or should I go to the US and not pay stamp duty and have better growth and have better dividends? Even with its foreign exchange fees, it makes, it's crazy.
Or as you say, just put it all into a Vanguard,
A
S&P
world, yeah, a
500,
world,
and
but you can
you're
do a
gonna,
world index tracker. 2.5% allocation to the UK, so it's not going to help much either. I do think we should be encouraging people to invest in shares. I do think the ISA product in general is way more complex. I also think that Reeves has now made pensions far less attractive because of the changes to inheritance tax, and therefore people are going to put money into ISAs. But beyond all of that, it's about financial education. You should be teaching people. It's almost the same, sadly, as birth control. If you teach people, at a population level, what birth control is and why it's important, birth rates drop, STIs drop, and it's the same with investing. If you teach people how to invest and what they're meant to be doing, they will choose to invest properly. Last thing on this, the only thing that I think might survive the next kind of round of tax cuts, rises, changes, is gold coins. You can buy them from the Royal Mint, VAT free and capital gains tax free. Only from the Royal Mint specifically, and only specific coins to be careful. But if you are a higher rate taxpayer and you're looking around, and yes, I know the gold prices are at record highs, that has risk as well. It's one of the few tax advantage things that you've got left other than the ISA.
Nice. I like that. Well, it's a wrap, mate. And I'll say, obviously, Charles Archer, thanks very much for appearing on the podcast. It's been great to hear your musings as usual. And if you have liked what you've heard, please do subscribe, hit the bell icon so you get any notifications of future episodes. And just leaves us to say, have a great weekend.
Perfect. Cheers. Bye.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.